Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Last week, President Trump accused Jewish voters of disloyalty if they voted for Democrats. Critics of those comments say they reflect an age-old anti-Semitic trope. Here's what the president said on Tuesday.
I think any Jewish people that vote for a Democrat, I think it shows either a total lack of knowledge or great disloyalty.
He made these remarks when asked at the White House about Democratic Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib of Michigan and Ilhan Omar of Minnesota, who have both been critical of Israel. But when asked to clarify what he meant by disloyalty on Wednesday, President Trump doubled down.
In my opinion, you vote for a Democrat, you're being very disloyal to Jewish people, and you're being very disloyal to Israel. And only weak people would say anything other than that.
So what impact have these comments had on the Jewish community in New England? And what does the president mean by disloyal? Joining me now is Susanna Heschel, professor and chair of the Jewish Studies program at Dartmouth College. Welcome.
Thank you.
Also with us is Rabbi Joel Seisenwein, senior rabbi of Temple Beth Elohim in Wellesley. Welcome.
Thank you.
Yours is one of the largest congregations in New England with nearly 1,300 families who worship there. Is that correct?
Yes, yes.
All right. So let's get into this. I want to get to exactly what the president said. So for both of you, either of you, just in general, your reaction, and is the use of the word disloyal troubling? Professor, let's start with you.
Of course, the use of the term is very troubling. So what he tried to claim was that he meant the Jews who vote for Democrats are disloyal to Jews and to Israel. Now, that's garbage, of course. But I also worry about how his remarks have been understood by the neo-Nazis and KKK and white supremacists with their machine guns who are running around this country. How do they understand? Do they understand what he said as meaning that Jews are not loyal to the United States? Are they going to use that then as a pretext to go and kill some Jews on the grounds that they are committing treason? It's an outrageous thing for anyone to say, let alone a president. Have we heard this in the past? Yes, we've heard charges like this in the late 18th century when we first had the notion of citizenship and whether Jews could actually be citizens of a country in Europe, or would they have greater loyalty to other Jews? But the idea that a president in this country would use such a charge against Jews in any context is shocking and outrageous and terribly dangerous to our lives as Jews.
Professor Heschel, I can hear the passion of your response in your voice. Rabbi, was it troubling to you? What was your reaction?
Yes, I think the utilization of that term is deeply problematic for the Jewish community. I don't think the president fully recognizes the power of words. And in Judaism, we learn that words have incredible, incredible power. In the Talmud, it says that the word is more powerful than the sword because it can kill from very far away. We learn that words can create a reality by themselves. And so I think if he would have used misguided or another term as opposed to disloyal, it would not have been as problematic.
Do you then think if he had used the term misguided, for example, Rabbi, would you have found the underlying sentiment to be accurate or appropriate?
I would have hoped that he could engage a debate with the Jewish community. Debate is part of the Jewish people. Judaism is not partisan, but it's deeply political. Jews care about issues more than Israel in terms of an issue. We care about economic justice, reproductive justice, racial relations, health care. And we're ready to debate and struggle and learn from each other and reach across the aisle and discern. And that's what I would hope for, as opposed to labeling someone disloyal, which seems to slander the individual.
So, Professor Heschel, I want to back up for a second for our listeners who just may not be familiar with the history of this term. So what is the origin for this concept of idea of disloyalty or dual loyalty among the Jewish people? What's the history there?
So the history goes back to the very notion of citizenship that arises in the 18th century. The idea that there is one law for all people, that everyone is equal in the country. So that notion of equality raised questions in certain countries. Can a Catholic actually be a citizen, a Jew, if it's a Protestant country? Can a Protestant be, and so forth? And Jews debated this and proclaimed their loyalty. The question was raised, for example, if a Jew is in the army in Germany, and Germany is fighting a war against France, would a Jewish soldier be willing to kill a French soldier who is a Jew? or would their Jewish loyalties transcend their national loyalties? And Jews proclaimed very clearly over and over again their loyalty to the country in which they lived. But there was a shadow over that word, which is why Jews are very sensitive to it. But when we come to the United States, we don't have a question of political emancipation. Jews never had to go through that process. This is a different kind of country, a democratic country. So that's why the charge is so deeply disturbing. But I would also raise the problem of where Trump got this notion in the first place, this kind of language. He didn't invent it, and that's the problem, because for too long, Jews have been accusing other Jews of disloyalty to Israel and to the Jewish people because of their political points of view.
So let me ask a question about that, because separate from this last week, we know it's widely understood that personal loyalty and questions of loyalty are meaningful to the president. And it's a term that he uses a lot, and it's a frame of reference that tends to be his frame of reference. Is it possible that he was using his own internal frame and not intentional in his choice of this language, or is that not plausible given the presence of that language in our history? What do you think, Rabbi?
I think you make a good point, but I think it requires a greater understanding of the president to recognize the power of his words, that loyalty can be highly problematic if it demands one to give up their own legitimate viewpoints. In Judaism, we learn iron sharpens iron. The way to get to truth is by challenging one another as opposed to just asking for blind adherence.
I'm going to bring another voice into this conversation in just a second. But before we go on, I really want to take a second to acknowledge the complexities of this conversation that we're beginning and that we aren't going to get to all of those complexities today. So, for example, we're not diving into issues related to the Israeli-Palestine conflict or the relationship of the U.S. to Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, just to name a few issues for today. We are going to remain focused today instead on the language used by the president last week to the rabbi's point, words, and to yours, professors, and how it both affects and does or does not reflect American Jewish voters. All right. So with that in place, I want to bring another national voice in on this. Matt Brooks is the executive director of the Republican Jewish Coalition. The coalition made news when they tweeted their support for the president's remarks last week. Matt, welcome.
Hi, Tatiana. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Matt, briefly tell us about the Republican Jewish Coalition. Tell us about your group.
So we are a national grassroots organization. We were created over 30 years ago, back in 1985. We have 50,000 members across the country. We have regional offices. Our headquarters is in D.C. We have offices in L.A., Florida, Philadelphia, New York, Chicago. Really, we try and serve as a bridge between the American Jewish community and decision makers in Washington, and also to be a voice for Republican policies within the Jewish community. So we have a twofold sort of operational plan where we try and impact decision makers in Washington, but also try and explain these policies back to the Jewish community.
Okay, so Matt, the Republican Jewish Coalition has said that it takes the remarks of the president, quote, seriously but not literally, end quote. What do you mean by that?
Look, I think we all realize, and I think the rabbi gave a good point to this in his remarks, the president often communicates in very broad and sweeping ways that don't necessarily reflect nuance. I think we need to take a step back and look at the context in which these comments came, which is on the heels of the government of Israel denying access to two very radical and progressive Democrats, Ilhan Omar and Rashida Tlaib, who have trafficked not only in anti-Semitism but are very active in the pro boycott, divestment, and sanctions BDS effort. And Israel decided not to let them in. And in the aftermath of that, there was a lot of outcry within the Jewish community, and many Jewish leaders came out in defense and in support of Omar and Tlaib. And I think the president was reacting to that. The reality is that, you know, I've been doing this job for over 30 years, and literally every single event that I speak at or every event that I attend, invariably, people will come up to me, mostly non-Jews, by the way, and they will say, I don't understand, with the Democratic Party moving so far away on Israel, how any Jew can still be a Democrat. And really, you know, this is just a variation on that theme, because there's a lot of people out there who are scratching their head and trying to square that circle to figure out how so many people in the Jewish community can still support a party that I think objectively is moving away from Israel at a critical time.
So there's a lot going on there, Matt. I want to quote the Washington Post, who said, quote, Tlaib and Omar have said their criticism of the Israeli government is based on policy differences and have repeatedly denied harboring any animus towards Jews or Israelis, end quote. I think it's important to note that. I hear you making some strong statements about the alignment of the Democratic Party with the interests of Jewish people. I want to come back to the president's language for a second, and I want to ask you, given the case that can be made that this is very loaded language with a painful history for the Jewish population, isn't it healthy in a supportive relationship to challenge even the people that you support and believe in? So given the history of the term, why not push back forcefully on President Trump about using that language?
Because I think, you know, I think while we can all agree that it probably should have been phrased differently, I think there's a sense that we need to also understand the point that he is making. And there's no question, if I felt that the president harbored these views or in any way condoned the implication of these views, I would be the first one to say something. The reality is, I think that this president has bent over backwards standing solidly with the Jewish community. In fact, the irony of this whole thing is that he's the one who's out there pushing back on two individuals, in this case Tlaib and Omar, who have trafficked in anti-Semitism and who have promoted policies that will undermine and weaken the state of Israel. And he's the one that's out in front leading the charge, and he's, you know, and then his critics are attacking him as being against the Jewish community. So there's a bit of irony there. But if I actually thought he harbored some of these views and was somehow trying to send a message, I'd be the first one out there complaining.
Okay, that's Matt Brooks, the executive director of the Republican Jewish Coalition. Matt, I appreciate you joining us. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
So, Professor Heschel, is there some truth to the fact that the congresswomen in question have made comments that are offensive? Even the Democratic Party backed away from some of Omar's remarks, for example. On the flip side, Matt seems to be equating very specific pieces of policy with broader concerns about race, ethnicity, et cetera. So what are your reactions to all of that?
I do have concerns about what those two particular congresswomen said and how they said it. So that's one issue. But I also, for example, don't take them as representing the Democratic Party any more than I take seriously a Republican who says, and who once did say, that a woman who's raped can't possibly get pregnant. I don't see that that represents the Republican Party. So there are people who make comments that are highly disturbing. But I would say my objection to what Mr. Brooks said would be this. If somebody comes along and throws kerosene on a house and then lights a match and throws it on the kerosene and the house burns down, is that person responsible for the fire?
This is the inciting hate concern that you expressed.
And he's been inciting for a very long time, and it's very dangerous. And I cannot understand, as a historian, how any Jewish leader cannot possibly refrain from condemning this as dangerous to the Jews. Look what's been going on in this country ever since he was elected. Look at the attacks.
So, Rabbi, part of what seems to be underlying some of President Trump's comments is essentially assuming that there is a monolithic set of attitudes in the American Jewish community around policy issues such as Israel. I used to run Catholic Charities. One of the things I used to say all the time is you cannot assume that all American Catholics are a single voting bloc. So what are you made a list at the beginning, but is of your, you know, your congregation's priorities or issues that they focus and care about. Is it a mistake to treat the American Jewish voting community as monolithic in some of these attitudes?
It clearly is. We are a community that is diverse, and Israel is a community that is quite diverse. Israel, for instance, is a healthy democracy, so healthy that it heads into its second set of elections in only 6 months. There are political parties that vehemently disagree with President Trump on what is best for the state of Israel. And there are Jews in our community who vehemently disagree with President Trump on what is best for the state of Israel. I don't think it makes them disloyal to the state or to the Jewish people.
Professor Heschel, we have some data that so the American Jewish Committee I cannot see yes. Well, you know what I'm trying to say. Let's move on. They've said that 73% of U.S. Jews feel less safe than they did 2 years ago, with 60% saying that they think that President Trump bears at least some responsibility. You've expressed some very strong feelings here today that sound to me like they are in agreement with those statements. So first, let me just confirm them. Am I right that you're agreeing with those concerns?
I have tremendous concerns. Too much of what's going on reminds me of the eve of 1933 in Germany. Yes.
So what needs to be done differently and by whom?
What can we do to defeat a demagogue who's in the White House? What can we do? And I ask myself as a historian, how has that ever happened? People did not vote Hitler out of office. They didn't even react in June of 1934 when he killed former chancellor. So what do? We can defeat the person. Sometimes it's taken a war. It's taken an economic collapse. I hope neither of those will be necessary. But I think we all need to come together and think about what it will take to vote this man out of office, because he is really destroying the country. May I just say a word about the word loyalty and loyalty to Israel?
Sure.
I would say Irish Americans care deeply about Northern Ireland and about the conflict there that is not yet fully resolved. And I, as a Jewish American, care very deeply about Israel and the conflict there as well and its politics. But I would say that deep caring that one has, which may be similar to the way we care about family members, for example, we're loyal to our family. We also can be critical and very disturbed and argue and so forth, but we get together at the Thanksgiving table. That's what I'm talking about. He doesn't understand, Trump, what it is to be a Jew. He's listening to the wrong Jews, and he doesn't understand how dangerous his words are, and someone has to stand up and stop it.
So, Rabbi, today we've heard both Matt and Professor Heschel talk about it being inconceivable that another person would take the approach that they're taking to these issues. The high holidays are coming, and you're going to have probably more people at your synagogue than you would on some other days.
That is true.
And I wonder if you've thought about whether this is something you'll address with your congregation and what you think you'll talk about.
You ask a great question and something that I struggle with mightily during this time of year. I can say that ever since Pittsburgh, I have spent more time working on the security of our congregation and our building.
Pittsburgh being the shooting at the Tree of Life.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Please go
ahead. And so the fear is great in the Jewish community. There is no doubt. But I do think that the greatest solution for this hatred is to be careful about our language, to minimize hate in our speech, and to increase love and compassion and reaching out to others. I just returned from Selma and Montgomery, where Dr. Heschel's father's presence loomed over everything that we did, Abraham Joshua Heschel, who marched with Dr. Martin Luther King. And it reminded me of the need for all communities to reach out and care for each other and combat hate together. So I think my message for the holidays, at least at this moment in time, is that there are too many communities that feel right now in harm's way, and we need to come together.
That's Rabbi Joel Seisenwein, Senior Rabbi of Temple Beth Elohim in Wellesley. It's one of the largest congregations in New England. Thanks for being here, Rabbi.
You're welcome.
And Susanna Heschel, Professor and Chair of the Jewish Studies Program at Dartmouth College. Thanks so much, Professor.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walt Withman. Tim Skog is our technical director. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Please join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.